Welcome to Happy Hour. Happy Friday, everybody. He's Adam Harahuck. I'm Sean Cantwell. We're actually back finally to do a show this week.
Happy Christmas. Merry New Year.
Merry Christmas on a Kwanzaa.
And, of course, that would be Lapeer Main Street manager James Tiberius Alt hanging out with us because he's got nothing better to do today.
He's off.
He's always off, but yeah. I mean.
Won't be working again until next year.
Yeah.
Look at you guys.
There's a lot of people. I mean, I was a little surprised to see Rachel's vehicle in the driveway, but she's off. Everybody gets this week off
yeah.
except for us people in retail and radio.
And service industry in general. Like,
yeah.
It was great. I got to work Christmas Day. That was.
Oh, you did?
Congratulations.
But you're a Bah Humbug kind of guy anyway. So.
I am, but, like, people are not necessarily always the best. Like, it worked out for me money-wise, as it turns out, but, like.
A lot of lonely souls in there just, I should have kept her.
A lot of bartenders whose bars aren't open that day who just decided they wanted to be hot messes.
Yeah. It's one of the few days a year that they actually get to go out and have a drink.
See, now, like, Jim will probably entertain some other DDA directors from around the state of Michigan, and they're probably respectful. They looked at it. They look at it, okay, this is what he has to do. Let's give him some respect. And there's a camaraderie there. Mm-hmm. Bartenders and everything else are like, it's my turn to get sloppy. Yeah,
sure. And they do. Let
exactly
me tell
how it
you.
Goes with DDA directors when we're together to drink. Yep.
Yeah, I'm sure it is. It's not like, oh, so this is your downtown. It's cute.
It's okay, I guess.
They're being all catty. Yeah.
You're downtown, quote unquote.
Oh, no hookah bar here. Oh, we have three. And meanwhile, other bartenders is just like, you don't know how to make a drink that I just invented 2 weeks ago? Loser.
Pretty much. Like, and those have been fun this week because it's also when like everyone's in town for the holidays and they're used to. Like, I had a couple of people come in who were, like, from out of state, like, from Florida and New York and whatnot. Like, you don't know how to make this shot, this drink? Like,
yeah.
Look around you. We have, like, three kinds of whiskey, two kinds of rum. You're lucky we have gin at all. Like, 90% of the drinks we make are, the ingredients are spelled out in the name of the drink.
But I bet you those people don't actually know what's in the drink. So if you're just like, sure, no problem, coming right up. And yeah. then use the philosophy of add rum, make it red, and here you go. You'd be like, oh my God, you knew.
This is a nice little spin. It's supposed to have Jaeger in it, but yeah, it's your bar. Well, let's check it out. It was actually a coffee drink. What is this?
This is the Michigan variation.
We make things different here. What can I say? Well, I don't know. I hear like in Wisconsin, they make old fashions with like brandy. So, I mean, these variations, I suppose, exist.
I
think
guess.
It's the old fashioned.
Can't remember if I've ever had brandy.
You're not missing anything.
I've got a bottle at the house that you are welcome to have.
Oh, you're just done
just
with
take
it.
Just take it.
We have a bottle of Christian Brothers that only exists for the purpose of cooking. That's it. Like,
really?
No one drinks the stuff because it's not good.
No, it's not good. Have you ever had anybody come in and want, oh my God, not Ouzo, but
Sambuca?
Sambuca.
All right. So, a former sponsor of this fine radio station, of our show, actually, used to every so often at the place where I now work, would buy shots of Sambuca because we used to carry it.
Flammable, isn't it?
I think so. It also has about the viscosity of Fireball. So it's like licorice flavor, but it's like syrup going down.
Ugh.
And he would insist on buying these shots for me, and I would do them.
Because you're not going to turn it. There's sober people in China.
Exactly. Yeah. But it didn't mean I was really thrilled about it. Brandon, if you're listening, you know what you did.
I have not spent a lot of time with Sambuca, but I did spend a night in D.C. drinking Ouzo with Greeks, and that was a wild night.
If you're going to drink Ouzo, that's the place
yeah.
to do it. I mean,
well, yeah.
Other than just in Greece with a bunch of Grecians.
Right.
Or do they like to be called Greasers?
But I apologize to Greeks, Grecians, and Greasers.
I don't know. Yeah, right?
Is Greece the word? Which ones you guys are Zuko?
I think they still prefer Greeks, but... Yeah.
Greeks,
yeah. Yeah, probably should apologize to all of those. See, we're already 5 minutes in, and it's evident that what kind of show we're in for today. We do have actual sports to talk about, though.
Yes, we do.
like we have all of the sports to cover because all four of your local teams are in play for various things this weekend. Michigan's in play for a natty. The Lions are in play for first place in the NFC. The Pistons are in play to be the worst team in the history of ever. And the Red Wings are just there,
we don't
guess.
Talk about the Red Wings.
Oh, we'll talk about the Red Wings later.
Is everybody else cheering for the Pistons to continue losing?
I think we all are. I think everybody is. At this point, when the Lions went 0-16, people were like, yes, watch them screw up and actually win that 16th game. But they didn't, luckily. They know their audience.
No, they did lose that 16th game and do exactly what we were hoping for.
But, yeah, I think the Pistons – and Sean and I have been talking about this for 2 weeks – and we need to check out StubHub and Ticketmaster and stuff like that.
I think the prices have gone down, actually.
Because the idea was, if they're going to go for the record, that the tickets were going to be like
$14
at to like $60 or something. Yeah. Like for like $100, they're going to put you on the bench.
Hey, there you go.
You'll probably still do better than half the people in their actual lineup. Like, I don't know where they pull some of these players from. So it's down to $26.
I kind of want to go.
I kind of do
today,
too.
Tonight, isn't it?
Tomorrow.
Tomorrow. And they're playing whom?
They are playing the Toronto Raptors. So they're going to lose.
Oh, they're going to lose. Yes. So, and I don't know why. I need to sit down and watch a game and analyze what's going on because I don't understand why. They cracked the 100 mark all the time. I think they were playing against Brooklyn Nets. What was it? Nets 132. Pistons 126. They're putting up the points.
You think that's bad? They were up 20.
They took Boston, the best team in the league, to overtime last night.
Yeah.
And they were up at one point by 21 points.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know if it's stamina, if strength and conditioning. I know I've been bitching about strength and conditioning.
Yeah, I mean, it's a younger team. Stamina shouldn't be an issue.
Yeah. I'm brought to you by. No. I think it's just defense. They're just not. They're a young team, so they're on. Green behind the gills. What's that saying?
I feel like I got to resort to like the John Madden. I'm like, well, yeah, it's defense. If you let them score the points, you're not going to win the game.
Yeah, the team that scores the most points is going to win the game. But yeah, I mean, they're putting up points, but they're not keeping points out of their own net.
Well, there's a lot of problems in play here, and a lot of them, quite frankly, go back to the construction of this roster, the fact that they hired a coach that. Really, this isn't his specialty, the team that they've assembled for him. And ultimately goes back to the fact that this owner just doesn't know what he's doing. And he finally spoke last week.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, heard about that.
He did a late-night press conference or a conference call with hand-selected members of the media that wouldn't go and trash him afterwards.
Hand-selected.
Yep.
There's a golden ticket you want.
The Friday before Christmas, let me by invite only.
And behind protective glass.
And so he's like promising big changes.
It was like watching an execution. It was like behind glass.
Basically.
Yeah, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
So they're promising big changes, but Monty Williams isn't getting fired. Troy Weaver's not getting fired. Arne Tellem's not getting fired. But there's going to be big changes. Big changes for what?
New design for their jerseys. That's what it is.
Like, what are we changing here? Like, we're not going to fire any of the people who are responsible for putting this garbage product out there, but trust me, big changes are coming. Like, what? They're going to go and make a trade at the deadline for someone who's going to be completely and utterly useless? But it gets stupider from there. Because
there's more.
They're threatening to be very active in the trade market in the coming weeks and months, apparently. Apparently, the guys that they're talking about targeting are all expiring free agents at the end of this season. So you're literally going to give up assets to win like three more games before the end of this season, and then those guys are going to walk because no one is going to be willing to sign a long-term contract in Detroit.
No, they're not. You can't win. The money's probably not there, and it's a bad location.
So with that being said, with all of that... about the sell the team stuff, because obviously there is a lot when it comes to, like, that's been the thing that comes up. Like, you've heard the chants on TV every night.
Yep.
And this man had the audacity to say, in response to the sell the team chants, quote, "They can say what they want, but that's ridiculous. It's ridiculous. Other than winning, and we should win more games, we do everything to bring the best to Detroit. Other than winning, what is there other than winning basketball games that you can bring to Detroit?" He goes on. sell the team. They don't understand what we're doing in the community. I know we have to have more wins, but we're taking care and being in tune with the community.
Okay, it's great you're doing can drives and stuff like that. Win some games.
Right. There's nobody that appreciates doing things for the community more than me.
Yeah.
But yeah, like, you own a basketball team. Your purpose is to win.
Yes.
You're a multi-billionaire. I don't care about the good things you're doing to get a tax write-off.
Right.
Don't care about any of it.
That's exactly what it is. Gores is just like,
great, you bought some kid a rocking horse for Christmas. Wonderful. Now how about putting a team on the court that's not an embarrassment night in and night out?
Exactly.
How about that?
Exactly.
Oh, but we're doing so much in the community. Other than winning, like, winning is apparently not the metric that we judge the success of a basketball team by. It's how many, you know, Rubik's Cubes we're buying for little kids.
It's everybody. It's all kinds of businesses. If you do some nice things in the community, let the community let everybody know that you did it. I hate it when, like, you toot your own horn.
And they've been doing this a lot. Like, they've been going on their Twitter profile and going and posting about these charitable things that we're doing because we're out in the community. We're all this. Like, if you actually cared about any of that, you wouldn't feel the need to blast it across all your social media that we're doing all these great things and whatever.
Yes.
That, you know, it's the second you put a camera in front of us.
Exactly. I don't know. Then I heard, like, there was somebody said there was an unnamed millionaire looking to make a bid to buy the Pistons.
It's Sean.
Sean's a millionaire.
I'm a millionaire?
Yep.
Yeah. I wish I would have known that.
Yeah. Word's out.
To
spoil right the surprise, there. Sean's put the bid in.
And I'm like, oh, it's probably Dan Gilbert, but forgetting that he
owns already, the Cavaliers. Yeah.
The NBA frowns on owning two franchises.
Can we just trade? Like, how about that? We just trade the Pistons for the Cavs.
There we go.
Gores can go have fun in the mistake by the lake, and we'll get a competent owner, at least more competent owner.
An owner with a ring.
So to be clear, it's trading owners, not teams.
Correct.
Because I don't know that we really want any team from Cleveland here.
That's true.
But yeah, owners, fine.
Well,
not
Cade Cunningham, maybe, but then the rest of I couldn't name another Detroit Piston.
You're not really missing a whole lot. Like, there's only, like, three competent basketball players arguably on this team right now.
And of course, we have people screaming at the radio right now. You guys don't talk about basketball. You don't know basketball. And that is a fair point.
I'll be honest. I was a diehard in the going-to-work days. Like, I followed the team a bunch, went to a bunch of the games.
He used to walk around with that mask that was it
that Rip Hamilton used
Rip
to
Hamilton
wear?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. The whole thing.
I have been to Pistons playoff games, but you know, and if they get back to that point, I would love to support the Pistons. I love basketball.
Sure.
But it just hasn't, especially in Michigan, the caliber of the game has just gone way
down. And over the last, like, 15 years or so, it's like the team hasn't been good. They haven't, even when it looked like they might start pushing back towards being competitive, only for it all to culminate in a first-round blowout in the playoffs. And then now, we were promised to rebuild. Finally, you're on the way back up, and that somehow got worse.
Yeah, it really is. And, I mean, here's me kicking a dead horse, but the Pistons are putting up the numbers. I mean, I don't get it. I just don't get it. I want to go back and watch some of these games and see why they're losing. Obviously, it's defense. Looking at the scoreboard, it's obviously defense. But what do they got to do to fix it? I mean, other than just blowing up the entire team and keeping everybody but Cade Cunningham.
I don't know what you really do.
Bringing Bill Laimbeer as a coach, I think that wouldn't be a bad idea.
Well, didn't he coach it? Well, that's
he was Detroit Shock.
The Shock.
Yeah.
Three rings with the Shock.
Right. All that I feel like the problem
WNBA they were outscoring their team 42-20.
Like, I feel like at this point it doesn't matter who you bring in. Like, these problems are more than just a couple players away from being fixed. They're an entire front office away from being fixed. That said, we got to hit a break. We'll come back and talk about another team that has a lot of problems that need fixing.
No.
Yep. Sorry.
No.
We got to do
no.
it. It's happy hour. We're talking hockey next. Stick around. It is happy hour. He's Adam Harahuck. I'm Sean Cantwell.
Yeah.
Joining us as well is America's, possibly even the world's, favorite Lapeer Main Street manager, the one, the only, James Tiberius Ault, the third, Esquire, and so
all
on and
above.
So forth. All of that stuff. Glad to be here on this last Friday of 2023.
Yeah.
So, with that in mind, here's where I have to go and kind of torment Adam a little bit, which is weird because normally this is his favorite segment we do on the show.
It is. It's all tongue-in-cheek, but yeah. Let's do that hockey.
As they say in hockey, oh, let's do that hockey, I guess.
I will be doing this entire segment in the voice of Eeyore from Winnie the Pooh.
So we've now dropped, what, 9 of the last 11?
There was that shootout win against a team that they were winning 5-1. I can't remember what team it was. They were up 5-1 at the end of the first period.
Then went to a shootout.
Which they won. Hands out. A win's a win is a win. But yeah, they have not looked good. They have, and it's very much like the Pistons. It's all defense. I mean, because you got three, like that last game against Minnesota, you got three goals. You got Sprong putting in one in the third period. You got Patrick Kane for as little as he's been with the team, that was his sixth of the season. Alex DeBrincat with the assist. And then DeBrincat on the power play for his 16th of the season.
I have a question for you, Adam.
Sure.
Wonder if you'll know the answer to this.
Okay.
How many games so far this season have the Red Wings won in which they have scored three or fewer goals?
I saw that stat because Bally's keeps throwing that down my throat. That'd be zero, Sean.
That's correct.
Yes.
So you're telling me you can't win a game unless you score at least four goals.
This is a situation where the team is all front-loaded. There's nothing on the blue line except for, I mean, you saw it against Minnesota where they were just leaving Reimer out to dry. You've got Perron and Sider knocking together like the Keystone Cops, completely taking themselves both out of the play, leaving the whole center ice open, the center slot open, and they're able to fire it in. I believe that was for the third goal for the night for Minnesota. And that was the thing all night. They were just leaving him to dry. Reimer is not a starter. Reimer is a career backup. He's been, this is his sixth stop, I believe, in the NHL. He is not a starter. Alex Lyon is looking like he's coming back. We'll talk about that here in a second. But they are not, I'm talking about the defense and the forwards, they're not keeping the puck out of their own zone. They're not keeping the puck out of their own net. It's not all the goalie's fault.
It's really not the goalie's fault.
But I think Reimer, in a case, there's a lot of goalies like Marc-Andre Fleury, who was on the other side on the bench, could have stole you that game.
I would absolutely agree, but at some point, you absolutely are going to have to. I don't think you're shoring up. You're not making a move for a goalie. That's not happening. I mean, the goalie's not the primary problem here.
No.
And also, there's only arguably four good goalies out there available at the trade deadline, and there's at least five or six teams that need goaltending, Toronto and Edmonton being chief among them.
Yes.
So, like, anyone who's any good is going to one of those two teams. Like, you're not even going to be in play. Like, the best you can hope for is, what, John Gibson, maybe, kind of, sort of, possibly?
If he couldn't make a case in Anaheim, nobody else wants him. I mean, nobody else should want him.
No, absolutely not. But my thought on this is if you're going to go out and acquire somebody, here's a name for you.
Sure.
Chris Tanev currently plays for the Calgary Flames. He has been a career plus, well, really his entire career between the Canucks and the Flames. He's not necessarily a guy that's going to do much in the way of, he's not an offensive defenseman, but he's at least defensively responsible. Honestly, he'd probably be on your top pairing in this town.
I'm entertaining all thoughts on defense. I mean, Mo Sider, save him. Everybody else can go. I mean, Ali Mata, he's okay. Ben Chiarot, not impressed. Jeff Petrie, definitely not impressed. Shane Gothless-Bear, he can stay.
Yeah, he can stay.
We'll give him a rose. He can stay.
Yeah. But no, like, you've got to acquire somebody. I mean,
you do.
Tanev is an option. You could make an argument for Noah Hanifin, I suppose. Like, you need to do something. Like,
they need to do
really
something.
Anything that gets Jeff Petrie off this team at this point.
Well, here's the thing is, why do they send Simon Edvinson down? I mean, at least give him a chance to show what he's worth. And I answered my own question. I love it when I do that. If he plays 9 games or more, it's another year off of his contract. So that's probably why they sent him down. But he's got a good size, a good body. He's got a great body. Good size on him. I just keep digging myself a hole.
Really, truly do.
No, I'd like to see more from him. See what he can do.
I would like to see more of him up here. But
other than that, I mean, if you look at the Grand Rapids roster and defensemen, it's slim pickings there, too.
It's pretty barren. Like, you need to acquire something from outside. Like, because this is a year where you absolutely need to at least make the playoffs, be in contention for the playoffs that last week of the season, something. Like, meanwhile, now you're down 9 of your last 11. Like,
yeah.
This absolutely cannot be allowed to carry on, or else I think you're even going to see some of the winged wheel faithful turning on
Stevie. You mean some? Apparently, you're not a member of some of these groups that I'm on. They want Iserman tarred and feathered out there, which is not happening.
Right. Well, no one ever accused these people of being smart.
Oh, no. They just think, there's actually one slappy out there that wanted Patrick Waugh to be behind the bench for the Detroit Red Wings. Let that soak in for a minute.
Wait, they want Patrick Waugh brought in as head coach of this team.
Yeah, a guy who could not finish an entire season. Just up and left the Colorado Avalanche as a bench boss, and they want to bring him in. I'm sorry, not when there's people like Igor Larionov, who would probably be one of the best coaches if NHL players could understand his way of thinking. There's not many of those. Some right. people also say that Sergei Fedorov would be a good coach.
I take Fedorov here.
Yeah, I'm going to go on a limb. You guys want to flame me on Facebook, please do. I welcome it. My idea for a coach, Chris Draper. And I'm serious about this.
Really?
Chris Draper.
Okay.
Yeah, I think he's seen the game from both sides. He knows what's going on. I just have a good feeling about him as a coach. I know that he's had some coaching experience, but it's only like in Pee Wee League for when his kid was playing in there, but he has seen the game for so many years. I think he would.
Do you really think even a coaching change is justified right now, though? Like, I mean,
no, I don't. But I think coaching adjustment, not being afraid of changing the goaltender when they've lit you up 5 times,
right? Clearly, this man did not pay that much attention when he was working under John Cooper. Right. That man will pull the goaltender like. In the start of the third period.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, if your goaltender is getting lit up, it's...
I mean, also, he has Andrei Vasilevsky and we don't, but...
Yeah, but you pull the goaltender. That's not... I've heard of, like, coaches pulling the goaltender and say, hey, listen, this is not about you. I'm not going to leave you out there and be embarrassed while our defense is playing like you know what. And usually, after when they pull the goaltender, if they have a timeout left, they'll pull him in. It's like, listen... I'm not letting this guy be embarrassed because you guys are playing like you're playing. And a lot of times, and we've seen it. We've seen it this season, Red Wings and other teams. You pull the goaltender, you train them out, the other team clamps down.
It does happen. Like, it works. Like, it's a decent motivational tool, honestly.
Yeah.
And it's not like you've got some, you know, nothing but scrubs out there in net. Like, it's not like in Tampa Bay you're not pulling Vasilevsky, but Vasilevsky's also not letting 10 goals get hung out no matter what.
No, but if he would, after, like, the 5th goal, he'd be looking at John Cooper going, why am I still here? Go back to the start of the rivalry between the Wings and Avalanche when the Patrick Waugh was playing for the Habitants.
Oh, yeah, and gets hung out for 10 goals, and then he tells Tremblay that he's just played his last game. I've just played my last game in Montreal.
It was all in French, but yeah.
Well, I don't speak French. What do you want from me, though?
Je ne gagne. Je gagne. But, I mean, and there's a lot of people, and maybe I'm opening up a can of worms here, but there was a whole special on the NHL Network on how that was a ruse. They wanted to trade Waugh. But they needed a reason, so they wouldn't be a burning effigy in Montreal. Okay, so we're going to go ahead. He's going to let in a bunch of goals. And then we're not going to pull them, and that's going to be the reason. But those are for the Reynolds Wrap tinfoil people.
I mean, it's entirely possible, but you also then in
killed your franchise in the process.
Well, not only did you kill your franchise, you also basically ensured that Mario Tremblay would never be able to coach in the NHL ever again.
Yeah.
That was his only season.
Yeah.
Like, after that, he never coached at 40. After that, he never coached in the NHL again. That was it. Like,
he was like a ticket taker over at Chuck E. Cheese or something like that afterwards.
Poor guy. You almost feel bad for him. Then you remember, it's the Habs. So then you don't feel so bad. Listen to break. It is Happy Hour, your local alternative, Solid State Radio. It is Happy Hour. He's Adam Harahuck. I'm Sean Cantwell. And we have to get into this a little bit because we have two very pivotal football games coming up this weekend.
Yes.
That involve local teams.
Yes.
And these are positions that, well, in the case of the Lions, we're not really used to finding ourselves in as a fan base.
I like it, but yes. I mean, it's a little more nerve-wracking. Is that fair?
That is fair, but it's also a nerve-wracking weekend for Michigan fans because for them, they're not used to, I mean, they're used to playing in the playoffs, but they're not used to winning in the playoffs.
Right.
And they have to go up against Bama.
The perennial.
The
winner.
Perennial, yeah, they're always there. They're always in it, pretty much always.
I was talking to a cousin of mine, and he's from Alabama. Yeah, he's a Bama fan. And I was talking about the game, and a bunch of us were talking to him about the game, and he is not sweating it at all.
As a Bama fan, he is not?
No, he is not. It's going to be a good game. He was doing that thing where it's like, oh, no, Michigan's going to have a great game. It's going to be good. It's going to be a fun game to watch. He was doing that.
Oh, God.
Yeah.
Got to love that. But that brings me kind of to a question out there. If you are even if you're not a fan of Michigan necessarily, but I just kind of want to get an idea of where people's heads are on this. Which team are you more confident will get it done this weekend? Do you have more faith that the Lions can go into Dallas and beat the Cowboys? Or do you have more faith that Michigan can go and beat Bama in the Rose Bowl?
I'm going to say this honestly, is I think I have more faith in the Lions beating Dallas.
Really?
Yes, I do. It's a national game. You're obviously a very young, they're all young teams. But, I mean, you have a U of M team that has done very well in the season. I'm not taking anything away from them, but like we talked about it just a second ago, this is Alabama. This is the Crimson Tide. They know how to do this. They know how to make this work. They have experience on their side. This is not good for Blue.
And while that is an entirely fair point, and I get why there is fear because of the past of this team.
Sure.
It's not the past anymore. This isn't the Bama of a couple seasons ago. This team is kind of on its way down.
Good.
They look a lot.
Talk me off the ledge.
They honestly look a lot more human than they have at any point that I can remember.
Because they lost one game?
Well, they lost. Like they weren't
to
even
Georgia, wasn't it? Or
well, they beat Georgia in the title game.
Okay,
and give props where props are due for that. No, the game they dropped in the regular season, they had lost to Texas. They lost to the Longhorns.
Yeah,
which I mean, a team that ended up ultimately also playing
also
in, the,
in there
the playoffs.
Yeah,
but still, this isn't the Bama that we're used to from back in the day. They haven't really beaten a whole lot of teams with huge resumes. Like Auburn isn't anything this year.
No.
You look back at the wins here. Chattanooga, Kentucky, LSU isn't the LSU of old. Tennessee isn't in great shakes either.
No.
Ole Miss.
Okay.
So you did beat Texas and you beat Georgia, and I will entertain also the idea that no, Michigan didn't beat anybody other than Ohio State. Like, that's the team you beat.
Yeah.
Like, you've beaten everybody at this point, but they're the only ones that were
of consequence. It was a garbage season.
But at the same,
I hate it. I want that first week to be a couple weeks ago. A couple years ago, when Michigan opened up their season against Notre Dame, I want that.
Yeah, the cupcake scheduling really gets old because you don't. The problem is now you don't get a sense, especially with how weak a lot of the rest of the Big Ten. I mean, it's essentially Michigan, Ohio State, and no one else really particularly matters other than maybe Penn State every other year or so. You don't get a good sense of what team you've got until like mid-November at this point. You don't really know. There's no way because you can't really gauge anything off of your conference competition, and you can't really gauge a whole lot when it comes to the cupcakes you play in the preseason, basically.
Right.
But here's the thing, though.
Okay.
Michigan, you look at the Ohio State game. If Michigan can force turnovers on you, then they absolutely have a chance to beat you. We'll go back real quick to that Ohio State game.
Sure.
You had a pick in the first half, of course. You'd had another pick late in that game. Like, your defense can make plays when they need to, and there is always that possibility that Bama will go and Jalen Milroe will turn the ball over. He's got 6 interceptions on the year.
Yep.
And if your defense can force, can force a turnover here or there, like if you're not playing particularly, if you're not playing tight, if ball security isn't there for Milroe, then you absolutely, I think, have a chance to win that game. And I would say it's more likely even that you beat Bama than it is that the Lions go into Jerry World and win. And I think that, and I will say, I think it's a distinct possibility that they can win in Dallas this weekend. Like, is it likely? Arguably, no. You're pretty evenly matched when it comes to, like, their pass defense is really good. Your pass offense is also really good. You look at your running game is one of the top 4 in the league, and the run defense for the Cowboys is just kind of middle of the pack. And if they can run the ball, and they'll be without Jonathan Hankins this week. He's been dealing with knee and ankle injuries. Their passing game is good. Your pass defense is just okay, not great, but you're really good at stopping the run, and the Cowboys' run offense really is just kind of middle of the pack. I can see a path to winning that game, absolutely, but I think it's more likely that Michigan can go in there and take care of business, force a couple turnovers, and beat Bama and exploit. Like, you start making mistakes against Michigan. Like, they're not burning you necessarily because J.J. McCarthy is the best quarterback in college football. For one, they run this kind of it's the old 3 yards in a cloud of dust offense that a lot of teams
yes.
don't necessarily aren't they're not prepared to scheme against it a lot of the time. And you can run just Blake Corum into the ground and get those first downs when you need them. Like, I think that there's a lot of people are scared off because of the whole it's Bama, it's the name that
yes,
really.
Yes, of course we are.
But
yes.
when you look at the teams that are actually out there this year, it's a more favorable matchup than you might think. And I think you're more likely to pull off the
win. Well, your breakdown helps. It really does. It helps talk me off the ledge. But when you get down to the nuts and bolts, I mean, we have seen Michigan kind of, I mean, of course, last time Blake Corum was injured, he was not in that game. So I'm going to put that in perspective. I guess, you know what? I'm nervous. I'm apprehensive. But let's play some football.
And again, I don't blame you for being nervous and apprehensive. Nick Saban's got a month to prepare for you. I get that when this team has a long layoff between a game like this, I mean, look at the TCU game. You go in there thinking there's no reason you shouldn't beat TCU, and then you ultimately didn't. But I do honestly feel like this team is different. Your opponent is they're not the Bama of old here. Like this is a team that is more likely to make the kind of mistake that can flip the game on its head.
I will say this. Jim Harbaugh's buttocks is nice and taut. Nick Saban's buttocks is like a beanbag. Stop talking about my Harbaugh.
Oh, there's no way we can keep that in on for the FM, but I don't care. Oh, that bit. I love this stupid bit. I really do.
Well, it fit because they're now pitted against each other.
It's true. Oh, that ringtone's still out there somewhere to be downloaded.
Nick, Jim Harbaugh's got it on his phone. I guarantee it.
Oh, he absolutely does. Now, I totally get that. Yeah, it's Bama. It's Nick Saban. It's you know, it's scary. I'm totally with you on that. But
yes,
there's no reason that you should feel like you're so outmatched that you go in Saturday not having a chance whatsoever. And you can make the argument, honestly, with Lions, that there's no reason that – I mean, I would make the argument that there is a little bit of a reason. That's because your defense has been kind of questionable this season. But I think there's enough of a shot there that it's – neither one of these are the ridiculous proposition that we probably thought at the start of the year.
Yeah, exactly. Well, with the Lions, there's not as much to fight for. They've won the division. So they may pull back a little bit. I mean, yeah, there's definitely implications if they beat the Dallas. if they beat the Dallas Stars, it's great.
But no, I get that
point
too.
Point taken. Okay,
I get that too. But also, I think they realize that their best route through the playoffs is to get that one seed, get that first round bye, get that home field advantage throughout the playoffs. So I don't think they're not going to be resting guys, at least this week. Now, San Fran clinches this week, which I believe they can with a win or a Lions loss.
Yeah.
Then, okay, week 17 or the game 17, you're resting everybody. But
yeah.
Right, I don't think you are necessarily for – you're not for this week because there is still real – there are still real implications in play. We got to hit a break. We'll do the picks next. It is happy hour. Stick around. It is happy hour. He's Adam Herahuck. I'm Sean Cantwell. We're taking a little bit of a break from the sports stuff. I mean, we let off with the Pistons and the Red Wings, and we will get to the Lions later on, but we still have to squeeze in an installment of our favorite bit that we do, Sean and Adam's Unsolicited Advice.
Okay.
Where real people with real problems send real questions to real advice columnists. Unfortunately for them, we get our hands on them, we intercept, and quite frankly, we're better at this than Dear Abby or whoever still doing this.
And Landers can...
Yeah.
Yeah.
So let's dive right in, shall we?
Yep.
Dear advice-giving person, my husband and I got married later in life when I was 49 and he was 44. This is his second marriage. We've struggled a bit with finances because I came into the marriage with much more financially, so after a few years, we decided to open a joint account. I was excited to begin this commingling because it would establish more of a team approach to our future goals. Well, after 3 months, I'm realizing he spent well over what he contributed, contributing $8,000 but spending $14,000, and this is now creating more challenges. He's refusing to tell me what he spent this money on and is making me feel irrational that I'm concerned about this. The purpose originally was to help me with bigger bills that pop up because I pay all the major bills, house taxes, insurance, cars, and he only pays health insurance, which I'm grateful for. This was the first 3 months of experiencing commingling, and now he's saying he refuses to come off the account. He is threatening that my scrutiny marks the demise of our relationship. I'm worried because I know finances can often create the biggest issues in relationships, so I'm hoping for some guidance. I'm not sure what to do at this point. Do you have any suggestions?
If you have access to the bank statements, you can find out, unless he's pulling it from the ATM, you have every way to find out what he's spending this money on. If she has entered into a marriage with this guy and she is sharing her finances with this guy and he's spending money and not telling her what's going on, he is an issue. This is a problem. She has every right to know what he's spending that money on.
You already know what I'm going to say.
Cut him off from your life and burn him and his pictures and everything else.
File for a divorce immediately, because this man is going to drain your bank account. He's not telling you what he's spending it on, which probably means he's using your money to go facilitate something with somebody else.
Like, what was the ratio? He's spending $14,000 and he's bringing in $8,000.
Yes.
Okay.
Almost so double the money that he's brought into the relationship.
$6,000. He's got a gumar. He's got a little side piece going on that you are financing.
That's absolutely what's happening here. That man is...
Unless he's a musician, then, you know, if he's a musician, that money's going to paying for gigs.
Honestly, probably is.
Yeah. So...
But other than that, like, there's absolutely no way that this man's being anything resembling honest with you, and you need to...
Well, she is, in her letter, she says, she's asking him, what are you spending the money
for? And he won't tell her. And that's the biggest... That
big red flag.
That is the biggest possible red flag that you could throw out there.
Yep.
No, absolutely cut him off. Divorce him. Don't, you know, take your name off that account ASAP and don't let him spend another dime of your money.
Yeah, you can't take him off of it, but you can take yourself off of it and not have any money put in there. I mean,
exactly. Pull your money out of it. And,
if there's any money in there, pull it out. Oh, I'm not going to pull myself out of the account. Fine. You're it. That's it.
Yeah, you absolutely.
And the health insurance is a big thing, but when you're contributing that much more, I mean, don't worry. Take care of your own health insurance. You do you, girl.
Yeah, you absolutely don't need any of that in your life. You just don't.
Yeah. Get rid of that zero. Get you a hero.
Absolutely. All right. Let's having just made quick work of that one.
That was a quick one.
Yeah.
That was simple.
That was. You love it when they're that easy. So let's dive into another one, shall we?
Yeah.
Dear somebody who cares, I started working in a new company a few months ago, and I really love my job. The team I'm in is very tight-knit. They like to go out for drinks. They like to go on vacations together. They organize team-building events very often.
Okay.
I was part of one team building 2 weeks ago, and they're now organizing a weekend trip away. However, they don't allow any families and spouses on these trips, which I understand. Let me be clear, this isn't a business trip. This is a vacation. Today I told my boss that I like going out with them, even though most of the times I'm being forced to participate, but I'm not comfortable leaving my spouse for a whole weekend to go partying with my colleagues. I told her me and my fiancé work opposite schedules. He works nights, and basically the weekend's the only time I get to spend time with him. And I told her I'm not comfortable going on the weekend when I spend time with my colleagues 9 hours a day. Basically, she started acting rude, saying I'm being irresponsible for my job, and that wasn't a family trip, because of people like me, we can't be a good team. Also, she said it's unprofessional to not be able to live without my spouse for a weekend. Honestly, I felt really hurt by those words because I love my job and put the effort to do it the best I can. But I also love my family and love to spend time with my free time with them.
Yes.
I love my job, but honestly, this attitude is making me sick. What do I do?
When you first started the letter, it made it sound like everything was copacetic. We hung out together. Everything's great, but it sounds like she's been required to hang out without pay.
Yeah.
So when she's saying, you know, I'm not getting paid and I'm spending all my time at work. I'm going to peace out of this because I want to spend time with my man and whatever. And that's, they're getting frustrated about it. I mean,
apparently.
I don't know. I mean, it's...
This sounds like one of those workplaces where they're like, we're a family here.
Yeah, we're a family. And, yeah, we're going to buy pizza for the break room. The slices have been cut into 16ths. So, you know, hopefully you get a pepperoni in there. Good luck to you. But, yeah, I mean, if it's so close-knit, that's fine. But, I mean, if you're not being paid... And you're being forced into, that's a cult. That is very much every definition of a cult.
Yeah.
You need to get out, or at least set boundaries. Listen, I see you guys 9 hours a day, so many hours, days a week. There's a lot of times I hang out with you guys, but there's going to be sometimes, I'm going to need my man and his needs, okay? I need this.
Like, I don't want to hang out with you people every waking moment of my day. And I've, like, over the years, I
need my man and his tongue. Because the way he talks, it's so eloquently. He quotes Shakespeare. It's fantastic. I need my man.
I just like
this. What were you thinking? Oh, Sean! Oh my God, you're dastardly. That's so. Go sit in the corner.
Wow. Well, I guess this is one just the podcast listeners are getting today. So, all that being said,
yeah,
the whole, like, oh, we're a family, those kind of companies. Like, I have been at places that have been varying degrees of that one way or the other. Worked at one place that was very, that was sort of that way, except they were very clicky. Like, if you weren't part of their group, you were kind of... you know what talked by everybody else at the place, and you were kind of, you know, left out of a lot of stuff. I've been there and I'm fine with it, because, like, I'm not here to make friends with any of you. I've been at places where, we all were friends and hung out outside of work. Yeah. I mean, certainly the radio gig, like,
sure.
We're probably we're going and getting drunk immediately following this show.
Exactly. I mean, actually, during the show. No.
maybe that too. But
no, point taken.
But there has to be a line. You have to be able to set boundaries, like, no, I'm not giving up my entire weekend to go hang out with the people that I spend my whole weekday with. I want my quality time with my significant other, and that shouldn't be a huge thing to ask. And I feel like, honestly, you may want to start looking for another gig, because you're going to end up getting passed up for promotions. You're going to end up getting scrutinized more, and they're going to try and make you so uncomfortable that they're ultimately going to push you out without, like, officially pushing you out, because they want someone who's more part of the family, so to speak.
The cult. I'm using that word again.
It's pretty accurate, honestly.
I have been in work situations where, if you spend time outside of work with each other, you build a little bit of, at least you get to know them personally, to where it's not just a coworker. They're also a friend, quote unquote. So that happens. I have been a firm, like, when I used to work third shift, I was a firm proponent of people that would hang out with us at the bar after work. It's like, well, I don't drink. I said, you don't have to drink. Come out there and have a couple pops, get a burger or something. It made more of a camaraderie. But if somebody said, no, I'm sorry, I've got to go to bed, I've got to go with this, I got to spend time with it, absolutely, go do that.
You would still call them all for it, though, let's be honest here.
No, I wouldn't.
You would call them words that I can't say on these airwaves.
No.
Because you do it to me, I know.
Well, that's you.
You won't come have a drink with me.
Well, that's
I'm
you.
I'm Sean, and I'm
that's
too
you.
Lame to drink with you.
That's you. You and I have reached a different friend level where I can call you that word.
Fair.
And not be...
And not feel bad about it, literally.
Yeah. Sorry, we didn't give you that merit badge. But, I mean... I mean, you get my point. It's that working relationship is out there, but it shouldn't be forced. It certainly shouldn't be required where you are passed up for promotion. You are being looked down upon by everybody.
You're basically being ostracized by your entire office.
Yeah. Someone tells me this is, if you really follow the strings, the puppet master is going to be the person who owns the company. And okay.
Well, it could just be, you know, that office, that boss, like that department, whatever. Like, sure. It's not always, I mean, a lot of companies do try to build that, but, you know, depending on what size company you're talking here, the CEO doesn't know all this stuff going on down below. Like this, is like total HR kind of stuff. But that said, you know what you need to do, though? I mean, other than update the resume and start looking for another job pronto, is, all right, if this is being required or semi-mandatory or I'm going to be judged for not showing up to it, pay me.
Yeah.
Pay for my hotel room or whatever, my accommodations for
whatever,
this thing.
Whatever drinks I do.
Pay me for my time for having to spend away from my husband or wife or whatever.
Yep.
Like, open up the checkbook. If this is mandatory, like, it's mandatory. I don't show up to like, if it's mandatory, I get paid for it or I don't show up.
Mm-hmm.
Period. Full stop.
Right.
But
right.
Seriously, update the resume, though, because this is not a company that sounds like you're going to be very happy with in the long term.
Agreed.
Let's do one more real quick.
Sure.
This one might actually be of particular relevance to you as a new parent, and actually one who was just at a kid birthday party a couple days ago.
Yeah.
Dear, anybody but them.
Yes, sorry.
I've been to a few kids' birthday parties recently and have noticed not just the birthday child, but also their siblings are getting gifts, quote, so they don't feel left out. Isn't a birthday party supposed to celebrate the person born on that day? I have two children of my own, and my mother-in-law and stepdaughters have both given sibling gifts on another sibling's birthday. I never got gifts on my siblings' birthdays. When did this become a thing? Is there a nice way to inform people to get gifts only for the birthday kid and hold off on gifts for others until their birthday? Or should I just keep my mouth shut and let people spend their money the way they want?
Yeah, the sibling gift thing.
I've never heard of this.
No, it's... I remember an episode of South Park where somebody was getting gifts and then Cartman's mom kept putting presents in front of him so he didn't feel left out. No, it's not a thing. It shouldn't be a thing. Kids need to be cool with watching somebody else succeed, whether it's presents, and then later on in school or later on in their jobs. Kids need to realize that not everything is about them. I recently had a first birthday for Joey, and in the invites, I specifically said, no presents. Your present is good gift enough. Nobody listened. They
still bring things, and they brought things for you.
Oh, Sean, they brought so many stuff up there that plays music and talks to you, and I got to learn how to use. I have to learn how to use just so Joey...
Or what you do is the stuff that's going to be musical or make noise to keep you up all night. You that stuff is just going to disappear and end up in the basement somewhere where your kid will never, ever, ever, ever find it.
Yeah.
But no, the siblings absolutely do not get gifts. We got to hit a quick break. John McMurray's Guide to Weekend Weather Forecast next on The Voice of the Thumb, WMIC 95.3 FM. It's that time of the week again. It's Friday. It's the last Friday of the year. It's the last segment of the year, which means it is time for the picks.
Ooh, you can pick your friends, you can pick your nose, but you can't pick your friend's nose.
At least it's not advised. So Jim's already sent his picks because he had to run off and do, DDA-like things.
Yep.
Drew Duffney joins us on the line.
Drew!
Hey, everybody.
So at least we got him here as we get set to try and pick a week of football games that, have some potential real consequences for your local Detroit team. But we'll go ahead and start with what could very well honestly be a preview of the AFC title game this year. The Miami Dolphins headed to Baltimore to take on the Ravens. And Baltimore, as the home team, is favored in this matchup. Baltimore also as the team that's been just knocking down contenders like no other. I mean, they put down San Fran last week, which, as a Lions fan, I was rather excited and happy to see.
Yes.
Baltimore is favored by 3.5 in this one. We'll start with Adam Harahuck. Actually, no, we'll start with Drew Duffy on the pick because we already know where Adam's going with this. I just love denying him the opportunity.
The moment.
Yeah, whatever. So, Drew, it is.
Baltimore.
We already know that Adam's taking Baltimore. Jim's taking Baltimore.
Are you going to be the odd man out? Come on. Come on.
No, I'm going. Sean. I'm also going Baltimore.
Oh, boring.
So up next, the Raiders headed to Indy to take on the Fightin' Uncle Ricos. The Indianapolis Colts.
That'll never get old.
It won't. Indy favored by 3.5. The Raiders, looking like Antonio Pierce needs to be given the head coaching job on a permanent basis immediately, the way he's got that team playing. I believe they're 4-3 since he took over for Josh McDaniels, a man who I still don't understand how he keeps getting coaching jobs.
He'll get another one, guarantee it.
So this is one that could have major implications in the AFC playoff race because the Colts are very much still in it. Very much so. Like, they could still win the AFC South at this point. We'll start, though, with Adam Harahuck on the pick.
I mean, that coaching change, nobody can deny that it was a good move for Vegas. So, yeah, I guess give me the Raiders.
I'll make that my upset special.
All right, Drew.
Thing is I bet for Indy last week and bet against the Raiders in a completely different matchup last week, and they both let me down. So I'm kind of torn at this point. I hate to say it, but I'm going to put my money on Vegas.
Jimothy also putting his money on Vegas. Vegas never loses.
Come on over to the dark side, Sean.
No. I'm taking Uncle Rico at home to pull this thing off. Give me the Colts. Up next, the Arizona Cardinals head to Philly to take on the Eagles.
Oh, come on.
A game we honestly wouldn't be picking if it weren't for the fact that it has implications for your Detroit Football Lions. So we need a loss. The question is, will we get it? The Eagles are favored in this matchup by 12. We'll go ahead and start with Jim's taking Philly. Adam on the pick.
I mean, the Eagles, this is... As far as Philly Eagles are concerned, this is a bad year for them. They're 11-4. The wheels have kind of fallen off recently. I think they're going to tighten up the ship. They're definitely not losing to Arizona. So, yeah, give me Eagles and give me all of the points. Everyone.
Jim.
What?
OnStar giving Drew some flack.
As they do. Drew on the pick.
You know what? I will take the Cardinals on this one. That was pre-planned. I know that they're 12 is a big number to overcome, but I think they're going to do it.
He's lost his mind.
He may have lost his mind.
Smelling all that diesel fuel.
What's that?
You lost your mind. All that smell of diesel fuel has rotted your brain.
Yo, he may have lost his mind, Adam. But you know what?
And I think it was 1997 he lost it. I saw it.
God, it was that long ago, wasn't it?
Yeah.
The Eagles are still doing... you know what? I have to say, even I'm not crazy enough to bet against them here. Give me the Eagles, but keep the points. Up next, New Orleans.
You both told me that I was crazy. You both told me that I was crazy that at the beginning of the season when I said, Lions to the Super Bowl. Now,
I still think you're crazy for that, too.
It's not so unrealistic as it was 12 games ago.
Fair.
No.
We got to roll, though. Let's do the Saints and Bucks in Tampa. The battle for the NFC South, the most garbage division in all of football. Adam on the pick.
Bucks are going to be the trash masters.
Drew.
Yeah, I'm there. Tampa Bay for me, too.
I am taking the Saints. That is the one game that apparently Jim didn't pick. We'll figure that out. Moving on, San Fran and the Washington Commanders.
Are you joking?
In Washington.
You are not serious.
13.5, the line on this one. Chase Young coming back to his former team 2 months after he got traded. This is going to be interesting. And probably a blowout, but we're going to start with Drew Duffy on the pick.
Okay, I'm taking the Commanders. I'm going the other direction again.
You have lost your mind.
I know what you said that twice. We're going to see what happens.
Jim's taking San Fran. Who do you got, Adam?
Niners by 20.
You know what? Drew is absolutely crazy. But you know what? I'm feeling pretty damn crazy, too. Give me the Commanders to deny Washington the top seed.
This is one flew over the cuckoo's nest. In this building right now.
Don't care. You know, sometimes you got to throw away the win in order to get the thing you really, really want, which is the Lions with a first-round bye.
Oh, there it is. And there it is. We figured it out.
Up next, the Seahawks taking on the Steelers in Seattle.
Ooh, nice.
Jimothy, of course, is taking the Steelers because, of course, he is.
Of course he
Adam is. On the pick.
They're both 8-7. You know, at this point, the only thing I can go for is the home team. Give me Seattle.
Drew.
Hard for me.
Who? Who'd you say, Drew?
Pittsburgh.
Pittsburgh. Steelers. Gotcha.
You know what? As much as I would love to see Pittsburgh win and deny us from having to see the Seahawks again in the playoffs, we both know Seattle's winning. There's no way that... there's no way that Pittsburgh pulls this off. I hate to say it. Give me Seattle. Oh, I guess Jim's taking the Saints in that other matchup.
I saw that.
Up next, Cincy headed to KC to take on the Chiefs. KC is still favored in this one by exactly one Taylor Swift. No, 6.5 points. We start.
Yeah, they let me down last weekend.
Yeah, like you guys.
Drew on the pick.
Like you guys will all kick her out of bed.
Huh? Yeah, I think you're right. I think KC's going to do it because Taylor's just going to tell him to shake it off.
Oh, yes.
And there comes Drew with bad puns. Adam.
I wish I knew more Taylor Swift songs so I could, like come back with it. But, yeah, no, give me the Chiefs.
Yeah, I'm taking the Chiefs as well. So is Jim. Now we have Monday Night Football, Green Bay, Minnesota. In Minnesota.
Soda.
Let's start with, I believe we're back to Drew on the pick.
Yeah, there's definitely going to be some pillage and plundering, and they're going to eat up all the stinky cheese out of Green Bay. Give me the Vikings.
Jimmy the also taking Green Bay. Adam.
Drew just took the Vikings.
Drew's taking the Vikings. Jim's taking Green Bay. Adam.
I don't want the Vikings to have any kind of joy whatsoever at this point in the season. Give me the Pack.
This is a hard one because while absolutely, like, Minnesota shouldn't be favored here because they're going to, like, their fourth quarterback of the season now because the Nick Mullins experiment has come to an end, I guess.
Their quarterback is now selected very much like jury duty, apparently.
Like, just random fan gets picked out of the stands.
Yeah, pretty much.
But the fact that they're still, despite all that, favored over Green Bay tells you just how bad the Pack are.
Yeah.
Give me Minnesota.
Sort of.
And then the matchup we all really care about, Saturday night, the Detroit Football Lions in Jerry World taking on the Cowboys. We start with Adam Harahawk on the pick.
I don't like my idea on this, but I looked at my crystal ball, which I got off Wish. Giving the Lions 28, Cowboys 24, but there will be a major injury that happens that makes things a little rough for the Lions.
Drew.
I also think it's going to be a high-scoring game. I think it's going to be our Detroit Lions 31 against the Dallas Cowboys 28.
Jim's got the Lions 27-24. There's no reason I should be picking them to win at all, but, I mean, that the line is getting smaller and towards the Lions' favorite. Like, it opened as, like, the Dallas was, like, 6.5-point favorites.
They're 5.5.
They're down to 5.5. I've seen them as low as 4 in some places. And you know what? Vegas probably knows something that we don't because they usually do. So, yes. You know what? Give me the Lions.
Oh, here we go.
31.
Yep.
Cowboys 27.
Preach on.
Now, that said, we got a little bit of college to do. It's that time of the year again. Yeah. Maestro, the music, please. Yes, it's that time of the season where the games, the bowl games actually start to matter. Not this one so much, but I thought it'd be fun to pick it anyway. Missouri tonight taking on Ohio State. To the shock of really probably nobody, Ohio State is favored by 5.5 in the Cotton Bowl.
Yeah.
We'll start with Adam on the pick.
I'm not rooting for Ohio State to do anything. If Ohio State was to be attacked by a grizzly bear, my pick is going to be for the grizzly bear. Give me Missouri.
Drew.
Want to see crying Ryan have to use tissues for all of his issues, so I will take Missouri.
Now, Jim took Ohio State, and he's going to beat all of us. I love that, by the way.
Yeah, that's awesome. Write that down.
Yeah, give me Missouri as well. Up next, we have Georgia, who arguably should be playing for a natty, but no, sadly they're, well, sadly for them,
Florida,
I guess,
State should be also.
Yeah, two teams that probably shouldn't have got left out of the seeding, but did. Georgia favored by 20 over Florida State in the Orange Bowl. Drew on the pick.
Yeah, I'll take Georgia. When it comes to college, they just have a hard time screwing up.
Jimothy's taking Georgia. Adam, who you got?
You know what? This is suicide pick on my behalf.
You're taking the Seminoles?
I'm taking the Seminoles. I feel bad. They're 13-0, and they got bumped out. It's all politics. Okay.
It always is.
Seminoles, moving on.
Yeah, thank God we got a 12-team playoff next year. That's all I got to say about that.
Exactly. But amen.
Give me the Dogs. That said, Texas, Washington, the other semifinal of the college football playoff. We'll go ahead and start with – well, we'll start with Jim, who is taking Washington ultimately. Adam on the pick. Texas is favored by four.
Hook 'em Longhorns.
Drew.
Washington.
Give me Washington as well. Give me the Huskies. And then finally, the game y'all really care about.
Woo!
Bama. Michigan. Playing for the right to play in the national title game. Yeah. Michigan favored by two at the Rose Bowl. Adam Harahawk on the pick.
Roll Tide.
What?
Yeah, Roll Tide. Here's my thing about this. I really think Alabama's going to win, so I want to win the picks. But if I'm pleasantly disappointed and Michigan goes to be a natty, it's a win-win for me. So Roll Tide.
Drew.
Can't believe I'm saying this, but give me U of M.
You think that's shocking? I'm right there with you.
Woo!
If Michigan's defense can force a turnover or two on the part of Jalen Milroe, it changes the whole way this game goes. Like, you're honestly, there's a reason you're favored to win here. Like, you're not, I know that past experience here did not bode well for you, and I know that it's Bama. This ain't the Bama of years past. Yeah. Michigan's winning this one. Give me U of M, and there's your picks. So we're running short on time here, but we do at least have to make an attempt here to cleanse our souls.
Oh, yes.
As Happy Hour would like to apologize to the Greeks, Grecians, Greasers, Cleveland, and Patrick Waugh, we're sorry, I guess. On that note, stick around. Sessions is up next. Whoop, whoop. All being well, we'll talk to you, I don't know, sometime in 2024. See ya!